Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Always a pleasure to be able to share empowering information. We're heard all over the world, and people have similar needs. They want to stay healthy. They don't want to be sick. And they want to know if they are sick, what can help them get well again. So we begin our program with peer-reviewed literature from the National Library of Medicine on those issues. But also, it's going to be a little shorter today because I have some exclusive information that's going to go right after health and nutrition in the body of our program, information that is compelling, honest, that gives you a completely different perspective on many of the problems we're facing today. But that'll come in a few moments. First, for those of you who are consuming organic soy peptides, and you can buy these in a health food store, that can reduce your risk of colon cancer metastasis. This is a University of Illinois study. And at this study, they showed that injection of the soy peptide, what is called lunasin, L-U-N-A-S-I-N, that's L-U-N-A-S-I-N, dramatically reduced colon cancer metastasis in mice. The researchers were eager to see how making lunasin part of the animal's daily diet would affect the spread of the disease. Quote, in this new study, we find that giving lunasin orally at 20 milligrams per kilogram of body weight reduced the number of metastatic tumors by 94%. I repeat, they reduced the number of metastatic, that's the spreading cancer, by 94%. We went from 18 tumors to only one. And that was done using lunasin alone. No other type of therapy was used. End quote. That's from Professor Elvira DiMaggi, the university professor of food chemistry and food toxicology. So, one more thing that we can add into our armamentarium to help us if you have colorectal cancer. And also, they only study colorectal cancer. Why couldn't it also be useful in other cancers as well? Now, there is also a new study from Trinity College Dublin that shows that as we age, more often than not, we have less vitamin D in our system. And vitamin D is just a super nutrient. You need it for so many things, keep your immune system up, to help your heart. But most people don't have enough. You'd think they would, especially living in Florida, Texas, Arizona, Nevada, California, where you get a lot of sun almost all year. But people lather up so much sunscreen that frequently they get some sun, but the sun doesn't get through to create the vitamin D3. So make sure you're taking vitamin D3 each day if you're not getting adequate sun. And that's in this study, they showed that there's an association between lower levels of vitamin D3 and inflammation. So what do most senior citizens talk about? Pain all over their body. And pain in their joints, their knees, their ankles, stiffness. Well, this was published in the journal PLOS One, PLS1, major scientific journal. And if you want to turn off inflammation in the body, and that might also help fibromyalgia, for example, then make sure you're getting your vitamin D3. For those of you who are vegetarians or vegans, you already know that a healthy, plant-based, clean diet really keeps your blood chemistry, especially your lipids, your cholesterols, in check. But now a new study could help those who are wondering, should I shift over to a vegetarian diet? Well, the University of Sydney says that after they looked at a meta-analysis, meaning many different studies, they found that a vegetarian diet effectively lowers cholesterol, glucose, and weight. And what are some of the conditions that you need to lower your glucose, cholesterol, and weight? Diabetes, prediabetes, heart disease. All right, those are just some. So you have to end up looking at changing your diet. You can do it slowly, you can do it faster. But if you go on a clean, healthy diet, you're going to have lots of phytonutrients, lots of antioxidants, including vitamin C, quercetin, onions, apples. You get your quercetin. That helps prevent bruising. If you are bruised, it helps heal faster. If you got a cut, scratch, infection, helps it heal faster. Want nicer skin, tighter skin, youthful skin? Vitamin C and quercetin together help you renew collagen. Right now, people are spending a fortune for these collagen creams that, in my opinion, are minimally effective. And so one way to tighten the skin, have nice skin and nails. whatever you're doing to help your skin, you're also going to help your nails. Your nails should be clear, smooth, pink, and hard. Fingernails, toenails. You look at the average person over the age of 50's nails and hair, the hair is thinning. It doesn't have the body it once had, nor the color. And also the nails, frequently the toenails have funguses and cracks and chip easy, weak fingernails. No, that's giving you an indication you're probably lacking silica, folic acid, vitamin D3, and vitamin A, and among other B complex and nutrients. So get a good healthy vegetarian diet. You get a full spectrum of fibers, and you get all the different nutrients, including the essential fatty acids. Now, I just finished a major documentary, and it's just being released. And it's called Manufacturing Madness, and it's an honest, objective, qualified look at what we've been doing for the last century or several centuries of helping people who have mental conditions or believe they have mental conditions. And it's sobering. And needless to say, I challenge many of the drugs people are using, many of the diagnosis as not being scientifically sound. So now the University of Liverpool published an article in Psychiatry Research, a major journal, and concluded that psychiatric diagnoses are scientifically worthless as tools to identify discrete mental health disorders. The study, led by researchers at the university, involved detailed analysis of five key chapters of the widely used Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM, on schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depressive disorders, and anxiety disorders, and trauma-related disorders. Needless to say, most people who are having problems with their emotions would fall into one of those categories. But here's what they found. Let me quote it exactly. Psychiatric diagnosis all use different decision-making rules. There's a huge amount of overlap in symptoms between diagnoses. Almost all diagnoses mask the role of trauma and adverse events. Diagnoses tell us little about the individual patient and what treatment they need. The authors conclude that diagnostic labeling represents, quote, a disingenuous categorical system, end quote. I remember, what was about 10 years ago, a little less, I asked you and the audience to join me in a demonstration when the World Congress on Psychiatry was having a convention at the Javits Center. And thousands of you showed up, and we filmed it. It's in the film. And I simply asked psychiatrists that were coming out for breaks a simple question. Do you have any scientifically valid method, like a blood chemistry, a brain imaging, any system at all, to prove that they have bipolar, they have schizophrenia, actually is real? And every single one said, no, it's all subjective. And then my response was, if diagnosing a person with a mental disorder is subjective, and you always give a drug, frequently they have to be on the rest of their life with serious side effects, why not just give them a placebo, a sugar pill? And that way, you're not harming the person. But none of them do that. And by the way, my webinar on that entire topic is about, 5 hours long, more or less. That is being posted today on GaryNall.com. And also, another study that does not get attention, and it should, and I read these studies in detail, is how much fiber is in the average person's diet. One of my very first debates was on ABC in Chicago, where a top spokesperson for the American Medical Association was saying, fiber, well, it's good for pigs and cows. No, it's essential for humans. And at that time, I did a survey, and we found out that the average amount of fiber, and this was in Connecticut citizens, was 5 grams a day. That's because people were eating potatoes like mashed potatoes and french fries, steaks, or some kind of meat. That doesn't have fiber in it. They were missing all the fruits and vegetables and tubers and starchy vegetables and nuts and seeds. So here's what this University of Yamamashi in Japan said. Low fiber intake during pregnancy may delay development in infants' brains. So, undernutrition during pregnancy is one of the factors linked to an increased risk of disease in children as they grow older. Yet maternal malnutrition remains a major problem in women worldwide. Animal studies have shown that a low-fiber diet during pregnancy impairs brain nerve function in their offspring. So this is a major cohort study, and we should be paying attention. So pregnant women everywhere, please get with a qualified nutritionist or health specialist or holistic nurse and get on a high fiber diet when you're pregnant. And by the way, this study in Japan had 76,000 mother-infant pairs in the Japan Environmental and Child Study. So it was a good quality study. And that's it on health and nutrition. And by the way, I want to thank John LaBelle, the publisher of the Gary Noll newsletter. I just got mine this morning. It comes at 6 o'clock there. And it had all 8-part series on 5G, my special investigative report. So if you want to get a copy of all the original investigations I do and essays and commentaries, health material, it's really good. Then just go to GaryNoll.com, scroll down to where it says Gary Noll Newsletter. And also go to Gary Noll YouTube, or you can go to Rumble or Odyssey for my Classrooms on the Air. I'll be doing a whole new series on different diseases, breast cancer, macular degeneration. I just did a long one, an hour, on hair and skin care. And now I'm getting into lowering cholesterol, lowering blood pressure, overcoming pain. Each one, and they're all backed by the finest information. All the footnotes are from the National Library of Medicine. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Well, we have a lot of interesting original material to share. The goal is to open doors that have been locked and barricaded by the establishment. And I'm not saying Democrats or Republicans. I'm saying people in power who are obligated to people who finance their elections, provide them or their family with opportunities that you and I would never get. And so you've been given only one side of a story, one truth. I'm going to begin by having you hear a doctor. This is an African-American physician, board certified, highly respected, and he's finally speaking out. Remember when I was suggesting that the last thing you need is remdesivir because it's so toxic? I looked at the original studies done in Africa, and it was on the Ebola virus. It wasn't on the SARS virus, and yet there was a very high, over 50% fatality rate. Well, no drug would be approved when you have 50% of the people in one study, and no specific studies, long-term studies, on a vaccine. None. And yet that was what everyone was given. Why? Why would you do that? Well, maybe we can answer that. Also, the FDA just approved remdesivir in kidney patients after a failed trial. This is from Dr. Peter McCullough. Quote, in a move that defies all regulatory convention, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved a supplemental new drug application for the use of remdesivir in COVID-19 patients with severe renal impairment, including those on dialysis. With this approval, remdesivir is now the first and only approved antiviral COVID-19 treatment that can be used across all stages of renal disease, but has no efficacy data at all to support its administration. Wow. And what are one of the side effects? Renal failure. Well, someone should be investigating that. Here's the good doctor telling you what other doctors would say if they were as courageous as this gentleman.
So the current situation is this. If you have COVID and you end up in the hospital, you're put on a rigid protocol, and there is high mortality rate in the hospital, and your family is kept in the dark as to what's happening. So what's going on here? Number one, the CARES Act is providing bonus payments to hospitals whenever you have a diagnosis of COVID. And then number two, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services is waiving patient rights. This is a deadly combination. So here's what happens. You get a payment because you offer a free COVID test in the emergency room. You get a boost payment if you have a diagnosis of COVID. Number three, you get another bonus payment if you are admitted with COVID. Number four, you get another bonus payment if you're put on remdesivir. Number five, another bonus payment if you're put on a mechanical ventilator. Number six, another 20% bonus if the diagnosis on your death certificate says COVID, even though you may not have died from COVID. And then number seven, there's bonus payments to coroners. Do you understand the gravity of what's happening right now? The Biden administration is literally paying hospitals to kill you. That's what's happening. This is terrible. We need to stop that. These are real human lives we're talking about. They're priceless. It's estimated at about $100,000 per patient is what the hospital is getting. Think about that. Ladies and gentlemen, the real news of right now continues.
All right, sorry for the audio, but this was from someone recording it, and I wanted you to hear the message, so let me repeat it. He's saying that the Biden administration is literally paying hospitals to kill you. Now, you could say, well, that's not true. What is the proof? Well, we have abundance of proof. First off, they give a supposedly inexpensive, it's just a swab in the nose of the PCR test. But the trouble is, at 41 amplifications, it's virtually a worthless test. It's almost guaranteed to give you a false positive outcome. So then you're diagnosed with a condition you may not have at all. But they're paid a bonus. And then if they give you remdesivir, the very drug, the most toxic drug used in all of AIDS treatment, that I would never suggest any human being take under any circumstances, they're given a bonus for that. Then they're given a bonus if they use intubation. And yet intubation has been shown by pulmonologists to have been a worthless, useless treatment for most of the people who received it. They should have used hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I'm going to bring a pulmonologist on to discuss why that was such a crisis and the vast majority of those people died. And then if you die, no matter what the cause of your death, if the hospital checks off COVID, they get a bonus. And then the coroner gets a bonus. So all told, it's about $100,000 per patient. So you imagine then what would happen if the patient was put on a protocol of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, monoclonal antibodies, zinc, of course, vitamin C. And, well, we have hundreds of doctors who did that, and their patients lived. So this is not about science. The science has been completely corrupted. This is about people who have made hundreds of billions of dollars through corporations and their own interest, and who lied about everything, and now are going to be brought to justice. A few more things to show you how you were used and manipulated. Quote, published studies accumulate and point to specific spike protein syndrome, and which may have struck Jamie Foxx. Quote, recently Jamie Foxx appeared after 3 months of silence. He was pale, lost weight, described having tubes, probably endotracheal and feeding tubes, and had lost his nasolabial fold on the left face, a telltale sign of alleged COVID-19 vaccine-induced stroke. And then it goes on to the talk about other symptoms that he's saying are all indicated to be stroke. And then also, when he was shown public, he wore a shirt clear up to top of his neck, which may have been possibly covering up a tracheotomy stoma. Quote, let's hope Foxx, his family, and his agents develop the collective courage to tell his fans about COVID-19 vaccine and what actually happened to him, not only for his sake, but to help warn others as a responsible public figure. All right. And then there's new papers published in the peer-reviewed neurological journals showing that both central and neurologic syndromes continue to mount and patients who have received the vaccine. But none of this is discussed in the mainstream media. But a few more things just to bring you up to date. quote, "It's evil to fake deaths to panic people," Dr. Robert Malone. And it says this. He said, "We're all used to the government lying, but in my view, this is has to be one of the biggest lies of all. The World Health Organization has told governments to code deaths to COVID, even if the virus was not identified in an autopsy, and even if it was not medically correct." Let me repeat that. The World Health Organization has told governments to code deaths to COVID, even if the virus was not identified in an autopsy, and in an autopsy, and even if it was not medically correct. Well, okay, well, that's how you scare people, by saying these people have died of a condition they may not have died from at all. Then there was an article in Mother Jones talking about why, you know, unfortunately, bad information, misinformation is going around about natural immunity. And the essence of the article was that don't trust natural immunity. It doesn't do what it's told. Okay. Well, I don't read Mother Jones. I haven't in years because of its bias. But to set the author straight, do your homework, please. I found in under 5 minutes, 96 research studies affirming natural acquired immunity to COVID-19 documented. And you can check with Dr. Paula Lisa Alexander, October 17, 21. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine shows not only that the effectiveness of the Pfizer COVID vaccine becomes negative, meaning the vaccinated are more likely to be infected than the unvaccinated within 5 months, but that the vaccine destroys any protection a person has from natural immunity. The study is a large observational study that looks at 887,193 children ages 5 to 11 years in North Carolina, of whom 273,157, or 30.8%, received at least one dose of Pfizer vaccine. And the study includes 193,000 SARS-2 infections reported between those dates. The study demonstrated that natural immunity, let me repeat this, natural immunity confers longer lasting and stronger protection against infection, symptomatic disease, and hospitalization caused by the Delta variant SARS-2 compared to the BNT162B2 two-dose vaccine-induced immunity. Comparing SARS-2 natural immunity to vaccine-induced immunity, reinfections versus breakthroughs infections, Kahn, Segal, McCappy, Research and Innovation, Cancer, Tel Aviv, Israel. There's the journal. Another one, a research study that analyzed more than 1 million people has found that natural immunity to SARS-2 COVID-2 offers longer lasting protection than vaccination. The study, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, found that vaccine-induced artificial immunity waned rapidly, whereas the individuals with prior SARS infection were moderately protected from the Omicron strain, with little decline in protection even after a year of infection. Another one. On January 19th, a report from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention showed natural immunity against COVID was at least 300% as effective as vaccination alone at preventing people from becoming infected with the Delta variant. Overall, the study showed natural immunity outperforming vaccine immunity when it came to preventing infection and hospitalization from Delta. The Weill Cornell Medical and Cotter, the protection against severe illness from so-called natural immunity remains superior to protection bestowed by COVID-19 vaccines. According to a new study, people who survived COVID infection and were not vaccinated had sky-high protection against severe or fatal COVID-19, researchers in Cotter found. Quote, effectiveness, a primary infection against severe, critical, or fatal COVID reinfection was 97.3%. Wow. Irrespective of the variant, meaning of all the variants, it protected you from reinfection or infection with no evidence of the immunity waning. Quote, similar results were found in subgroup analysis of those 50 years of age. And that was Dr. Laith Radad with Weill Cornell Medical Cotter and colleagues said after studying long-term natural immunity with vaccine. So those are just a few of the 96 research studies. Now, what if you don't decide to do your own independent research and look at the actual data? Then you might believe it being completely objective and factual. Well, now you have an alternative opinion based upon studying the actual peer-reviewed literature. But again, you do with that what you want. Now, we're going to do something a little different. And by the way, this is taking us a little different direction. I'm going to be focusing upon those individuals who are willing to come forward and say no more. No more of you telling me that somehow I'm a bad person, I'm an evil person if I don't use your preferred pronouns. But then again, you want to remove certain words completely from language. You don't want us to be able to say certain words in conversations. You want them banned from libraries, from books, altogether. Okay. So what are the words that we should not use anymore? First of all, you cannot call your mom or your dad and say, hi, mom, hi, dad. You can't do that anymore. No, and they want to make it by law. They want to punish you if you don't. Because if you should call your mom and say, hi, mom, to them, you've just put their life in crisis. So they say. And so you can call your mom and you have to say, hi, chest feeder. And you can speak for your dad. Hi, testicles producing spermatosa. Or your sister. Hi, vagina that bleeds. Oh, yeah, yeah. You cannot say anything with the word man, like man up, man power, mankind. Anything with black, black ball, black sheep, black list, black box. You can't say, don't be a girl. You cannot say, I don't see color. Now think about that. Martin Luther King today would be outed, canceled, destroyed. He'd be destroyed within an hour if he were in the world today and alive. So he based everything upon the quality of your character, not your color, not these people. Oh, you can't say oriental. You can't say sexual preference. You can't say ladylike. You can't say honey. If you're a couple, married, going together, you can't say sweetheart. You can't say any of the words that are commonly people like to use with one another, showing their affection and love. You can't say cakewalk. Politico banned biological male and biological female. So all of biology is now off limits. There's no such thing as biological reality. You cannot say Politico. Well, that shouldn't surprise anyone. Biological male, biological female, can't say it. Stanford University and University of California schools have also banned ageism, colonialism, cultural appropriative, gender-based, precise language, institutional racism, person first, abort should be changed to cancel, handicapped parking should be changed to accessible parking, committed suicide should be changed to died by suicide, blind review changed to anonymous review, addict should be changed to person with a substance abuse disorder, guru should be changed to subject matter expert, banned at Cambridge University because they carry assumptions of inequality. You can't use the word fair, brilliance, or genius. Words being banned in the United Kingdom, sweetie, honey, dear, cupcake. Words banned in Australia, hey guys, hello ladies, boss, bossy, feisty, if applied to a woman, sweetie, honey, can't use them. As an aside, you can't use words like entitled, science, evidence-based, science-based, fetus. So that's what they want to change, and they're really serious about it. Now, this is a tiny minority of people, and the more radicalized they are, the more they keep coming up with things that they don't want you to say, do, and how you should be excluded. And because no one stood up and said anything to them, they've gotten away with it. Imagine that. Well, some people are fighting back, And this is one of the most articulate, insightful individuals you're going to hear now. This is a person who decided to fight back. And so let's hear what she has to say. She's speaking with a group at, I think it's St. George Church in Great Britain. And her lecture is entitled Resisting Woke, How to Fight Back. Here she is.
How am I supposed to follow that? I don't have a PowerPoint presentation or any videos, but I do want to start by saying that I am extremely honoured to be speaking in between Konstantin and Eric. So I'm going to begin by telling a short story. In 793, when England wasn't England yet and was still made up of a series of kingdoms, it was invaded by the Danes. Starting in Northumbria, one by one, the kingdoms fell until just one was left, Wessex, ruled by Alfred the Great. When the Danes suddenly attacked the royal stronghold at Chippenham in 1878, Alfred was forced to flee with a tiny band of men hiding in the marshes of Somerset. All was lost. Alfred had imagined an England united under one crown. And now he was in a boggy marsh, a king without a kingdom. And it was during this time that he had a dream, or a vision, apparently, of St. Cuthbert, of the Northumbrian saint, encouraging him not to give up. And from that position of almost total defeat, he did what Alfred did best. He organized. From the marshes, he planned the retaking of Wessex and ultimately of England. He raised the feards of the shires, and in the seventh week after Easter, so not long from now, he won a decisive battle at Edington in Wiltshire. Alfred was not a physically strong man. In fact, he was plagued by debilitating illness. But he thought not in terms of his own lifetime, but in generations, even centuries. The system of burghs he established still mark the geography of our landscape today as boroughs. His grandson, Athelstan, was crowned Rex Anglorum, King of England. England could have been extinguished ingloriously that day in those marshes. Instead, one man's imagination, ingenuity, organization, and courage, and the willingness of those who rallied to his call, snatched England away from a very different fate. Well over a millennia later, in 1945, a man was arrested in the Soviet Union for writing derogatory comments about Joseph Stalin in private letters to a friend. He was accused of founding a hostile organization and was taken to Lubyanka prison in Moscow and eventually hauled off to the Gulag. Between 1958 and 1967, he wrote The Gulag Archipelago. And a year later, it was smuggled out of the USSR and went on to sell more than 30 million copies in 35 languages. Now in the 2020s, another of Solzhenitsyn's works has struck a chord in our own time, and it's no wonder why. His short essay, Live Not by Lies, in which he urges fellow Soviets not to comply with the lies of the regime. People supported the lies to protect their families and livelihoods, and who could blame them? They put whoever they want on trial, he wrote, and brand the healthy as mentally ill. The people feel helpless. They ask themselves, but what can we do to stop it? We haven't the strength. Solzhenitsyn, in his wisdom and experience, tells us that the simplest and most accessible key to our liberation is the personal non-participation in lies. The personal non-participation in lies. That's his instruction. Never knowingly support lies. Why am I telling you these stories? Well, I've been asked today to speak about resisting woke, and in my opinion, it's deserving of a better description, and Eric Kaufman has a much better description and term for it. Some have suggested that there's an element of mass formation psychosis in what we've been seeing, that it's a form of collective hysteria like that was seen in 17th century Salem or in 1930s Germany. Perhaps. Gaslighting is a term used to refer to a form of psychological manipulation that leads a person to doubt their own sanity. If we are seeing something analogous to mass gaslighting, not in any conspiratorial sense, but in the sense that an individual might have a bout of bad mental health, then a discussion of truth and lies is very relevant. So let's just take a look at a few examples. Firstly, our history. We're told that Beethoven and Mozart are white supremacists, that abolitionists are racists, and their statues must be toppled. Is that true? That in fact, the entirety of our history participates in a racist, ableist, patriarchal power structure that serves only white, cis, straight, usually old, sometimes dead men. Everything is evil. Everything in our history participates in that sin. Rigor and the details of particular cases are simply not relevant. Let's take a look at one example, the Tobias Rustat Memorial in Jesus College, Cambridge. Rustat was a 17th century benefactor of the college and a supporter of Charles II. Following BLM, the college set up a legacy of slavery working party. They petitioned to have the memorial removed, and this was actually supported by the church. A student of the LSWP emailed all undergraduates saying that Rustat, quote, amassed much of his wealth from the Royal Africa Company that captured and shipped more enslaved African-American women, men, and children to the Americas than any other single institution of the entire history of the transatlantic slave trade. The Archbishop of Canterbury said, why is it such agony to remove a memorial to slavery? Except this wasn't true. It wasn't a memorial to slavery, but to a benefactor, a sinner, as Christianity believes all people to be. The charges against this dead man were factually weak. The old Jesuits fought it, and in the end, the truth won out. The judge told the college, you did not do your homework properly. You have not dealt fairly with critics. And look at the attempts to remove David Livingstone's statue in Glasgow due to links with slavery. He was a devoted abolitionist all of his life. We are told that our history is about race and slavery and nothing else. We are told that it has its foundations in white supremacy and white privilege. No matter the color of your skin, you must believe this, even if it goes against your own experience. The experience of David Livingstone, who as a child was a child laborer working in a cotton mill. Or the experience of white working class boys today who have been statistically shown to be the most disadvantaged group. If that little boy says that he doesn't feel privileged, is he a racist? And what about the people of African or Caribbean ancestry who challenge the narrative that everything in our country and in the West is systemically racist? Is that false consciousness? Like a magician doing the old switcheroo, equality has been switched for equity. Equality itself is racist. The means of achieving equality, meritocracy and democracy, as Constantine mentioned, are white supremacist tools of oppression. Treating everyone equally is oppressive. Treating everyone differently is equitable. And let's look at mathematics. Without a sense of humor, someone tells you that 2 plus 2 can equal 5. When Durham University changed their guidance on, or issued guidance on decolonizing maths in their curriculum, they pointed to something called ethnomathematics, the idea that maths and culture are linked. The guidance said, this is a quote, it might then be inaccurate to suggest mathematics is a universal language. If maths is not objective, then 2 plus 2 really can equal 5. And Doug Stokes, a professor from Exeter University, rightly called this judgmental relativism and said it was, quote, an inversion of science. And what about sex? How many times have you seen politicians quivering recently because someone has asked them what a woman is? When scientist Sir Robert Winston said that you can't change biological sex, he fully expected that he would be called a transphobe. But the immutability of biological sex is the foundation of equal rights. This is why women are worried, but they are accused of transphobia. This is the concern that made Jordan Peterson famous. that compelled speech is a dangerous thing. If you are mandated to use someone's preferred pronouns, that is compelled speech. And compelled speech can force you to say something that you believe isn't true, to force you to act or speak against your own conscience. Like the Christian doctor who was struck off for refusing to use a transgender woman's pronouns, or the academics who have been hounded out of their institutions for stating something most people throughout all of human history have believed to be true, something that isn't just a belief, but is a scientifically accurate fact. The message this sends is that we should not trust our senses or our own reason. This is gaslighting, and it's a risky business, particularly for children, because it asks you to acclimatize to repeatedly betraying what you think is right. It makes us vulnerable as individuals and as a society. A society full of people who don't trust themselves is necessarily servile to something. It's an infantilized society of people that need a crutch to lean on, and a crutch can be provided by ideology. Orwell dramatized the centrality of this at the end of 1984. When his interrogators are holding up four fingers, Winston Smith must not only say that he sees five fingers, he must also believe it. History, reason, the basis of rights, the integrity of your own perception, these are all pretty fundamental things. So, how do you resist woke? How do you quell the tide of what Charles Moore called jiggery wokery? Solzhenitsyn had some ideas, and he actually listed them in his essay Live Not by Lies. Firstly, don't write, sign, or publish anything that distorts the truth. Don't utter lies in private or in public conversations or read from a crib sheet. In art, paintings, photography, music, broadcast, don't support false thought or distort the truth as you understand it. Don't use other people's quotes just for the purposes of success at work unless you agree with it. Don't be forced to demonstrate or rally or raise banners or say slogans that you don't believe. Don't vote for anyone that you don't sincerely support if you think that they're dubious or unworthy. Walk out of sessions, lectures, plays, and films if you hear what he called ideological drivel, lies, or propaganda. And don't subscribe to any newspapers that distort or hide the underlying facts. So let's translate some of these for our own time. If you get hounded by a mob, don't issue a forced false apology and grovel if you don't believe that you've said anything wrong. Don't virtue signal to win social points or cover your back by saying things that you don't believe are true, usually by posting faddish things on social media unthinkingly, just so that you can feel safe and in with a certain crowd. Don't nod along and force yourself to sit through ideological preaching or accept things like unconscious bias training if you think it's hokum. Don't let yourself feel peer pressured to go onto ideological marches or make gestures like taking the knee because you fear that your peers will view you as a racist or a sexist or whatnot if you don't. Don't ever let your speech be compelled by social pressure. Don't take on the words, phrases, and slogans of other people, piece them together, and then regurgitate them. Do your own thinking, come to your own conclusions so that you know what you think. Don't let your employer or colleagues force you to do anything ideological, like putting pronouns in your email signature, if you don't want to. Try to create a situation in which your employment is secure enough that you can feel brave by joining organizations like the Free Speech Union as a kind of insurance policy. And don't betray your own conscience. Be willing to make sacrifices for the things that you believe to be true. And finally, keep an eye on your own mind and try to be as truthful and independently minded as possible, knowing where your ideas are coming from. This will stop us from sinking into the dark, chaotic bog of the metaphorical marshland. Let me read you a quote by Solzhenitsyn. He wrote, "Let us not glue back the flaking scales of the ideology, not gather back its crumbling bones, nor patch together its decomposing garb. And we will be amazed by how swiftly and helplessly the lies will fall away, and that which is destined to be naked will be exposed as such to the world." That is the individual response. But where does the story of Alfred the Great fit in? We often look at our institutions and say, everything has gone too far, the situation is helpless. It looks like total defeat. The harmony of the institutional ecosystem has already been completely decimated, and we don't have the means to build new ones fast enough. But look around this hall. Look at those faces and look at the fact that we are all here. Over the last few years, we have seen a blossoming of all sorts of organizations, not particularly political ones, not necessarily of the right or of the left, but organizations that are devoted to free speech and debate, to liberty, to protecting our heritage, to myth busting, and to telling the truth.
Hey Gary, we're testing.
Alfred the Great was successful because his powers of organization made him bigger than himself and made those who turned up at Eddington greater than the sum of their parts.
All right, he said the comics is back.
Because he had the wisdom and the vision to think generations ahead.
So you want to switch back.
We live in an age of fast food, streaming, Deliveroo, clicks, tweets, and instant gratification. We don't have to be atomized individuals. We can institutionalize truth, beauty, and liberty as well as speaking it. We can build, and as Ruskin said, when we build, let us build as if we build forever. Alfred didn't see his grandson crowned King of England, but he is the reason that we are standing here today celebrating the patron saint of England. Jordan Peterson's interpretation of St. George slaying the dragon includes the idea that in courageously facing up to dragons, there is some kind of profound reward at stake. Solzhenitsyn lays out a choice between spiritual independence or spiritual civility. It's a call to have the courage to defend your own soul. That is the reward. He said, if we shrink away, let us cease from complaining that someone does not let us draw breath. We do it to ourselves. We do it to ourselves. How do you resist woke? I don't think there's an easy answer to that question. But my offering is tell the truth and build. Happy St. George's Day.
Hi, don't do it. Hi. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I want to share a few more issues with you. Ed Dowd, who we've had on this program, who has a team of analysts reviewing the medical literature concerning deaths after vaccination, has found up to 40% of people who died from unknown causes had the vaccine. And now there's a new study just out today. Quote, Ed Dowd drops bombshell data, hematological, meaning blood-related claims, up 522% above trend in 2022. And, quote, we are looking for data like this, and we found it in the United Kingdom's personal independence payment system, announced former BlackRock portfolio asset manager Edward Dowd. We need the help of the medical community and the regulators to explain what's going on because this is alarming. And then it shows these charts, 2020, 2021, 2022. And then you just start seeing the body count go up. Quote, the COVID-19 vaccine campaign has generated a tidal wave of new patients. And as you can see, I'll point out hematological blood-related up 522%, and I want to say this is above trend. So what happened that would have caused this? Well, the vaccine, and now we're seeing all the different things like the nano self-organizing particles that you can't just get rid of out of the body. So one more piece to this puzzle. I just thought you would like to know that. And also, another clip here that I just got in. And let's see what it says. It's, I'll deal with this tomorrow. It's a longer piece. Again, there is a tidal wave of good quality independent science showing how bad all this was. So just want to keep you in the loop. Again, what you do is your choice, but be informed. You know, don't Don't assume that what people are telling you is correct simply because you're being told by some government agency something is right. And why is this speech important? Because the latest study from Pew says 70% of Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents support speech limits. So when over 70% of one political party wants to ban free speech, what do you have if you don't have free speech? You don't have freedom, because freedom is the ability to talk, to discuss, to analyze, to debate, to challenge, to dissent. And now you're not allowed to do this. This is from Jonathan Turley, constitutional lawyer. Quote, I have previously written columns about the rising generation of censors in our country. After years of being told that free speech is harmful and dangerous, many young people are virtually speech phobics, demanding that opposing views be silenced as, quote, triggering or even forms of violence. Now, a Pew poll shows just how much ground we have lost, including the emergence of the Democratic Party as a virulent anti-free speech party. Pew found that, quote, Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents are much more likely than Republicans and Republican learners to support the U.S. government taking steps to restrict false information online. And by the way, who determines what's false online? The government, the tech companies, big business, ideologues, not you or I. And look at all the true information that the public was not informed about that could have saved them lives, saved their lives, had we known it. But all of our speech was censored. Just want to share that with you. Now, we also have someone on the phone now, and we'll go over and say hello to that person. What is your name, please?
Good afternoon, Gary. My name is Marie.
Hi, Marie. And I'm assuming that you spoke with Luann, and we have an upcoming fundraiser for WBAI, our sister station, for people coming down to the retreat in the middle of September, either 1 or 2 weeks. Which retreat were you at?
Okay, I was at the anti-aging retreat last year.
And what did you experience there? What was the environment, the classes, the food, the juicing? How did that impact you?
Okay, the program was quite intense and compact, but to be among like-minded people that brought a really special kind of positive energy and vibration. So from the early morning sun salutation with Cecilia in the yoga hut, the heavy-duty workouts at the gym, the water aerobics with John, the power walking in the morning, yes, the food, the delicious meals, and the juicing all day, your pop-up lectures and your lectures in the evening, they were awesome. The grounds, the gardens, the animals, the fantastic staff, all of it put together provided a very excellent setting for healthy living. It was quite beneficial for me. And even now I continue with what I have learned. I am still doing my fasting on the weekends. I still take my supplements, not all of them, but most. I've lost over 30 pounds since I started the program, that was one of my goals. And most importantly, I'm doing meditation every day. As this has motivated me to really continue to navigate just the wonderful and marvelous created bodies that we have. So the program was a lifetime learning event for me, and I thank you.
Good for you. I appreciate you calling in. And for those in the WBA audience, if you'd like to support the station and your own good health, call Luann to see if this is right for you, 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. Now, every retreat I do is different. This is not an anti-aging retreat. And by the way, I sent the latest film that I'll be announcing shortly that will be a part of a fund drive for BAI, the final copy and Bill is, you know, the head of the Life Extension Foundation, Anti-Aging Foundation. He supports some of the most important anti-aging and research in the world. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I get this email back, how much he appreciated the film. It not only its content and the quality of the filmmaking, but the message. He said the message is powerful. And so that's all I'll say about the film for the moment. A brand new film. And this is not the same film I just did a webinar on 3 weeks ago. This is a brand new film. I think everyone's going to find it of interest. But in any case, it's getting people to a place where they feel they can relax, they can exhale, they can start to put their life in perspective, they can ask themselves some basic questions. She mentioned I do pop-up lectures. I did 26 pop-up lectures in 1 week. Now, these pop-up lectures can occur at any time when I see something I believe people could benefit from. For example, people walking a nature walk, beautiful country, all back roads, and they were talking. And yet we'd ask them, go in silence, to really, you'll get more of the walk if you're in silence. But there was a small group of people talking. So I stopped there on the road and I did a 1 hour talk on what does silence provide us? When do we listen? We can't listen if we're talking. We can't listen if our mind is chattering. Can't listen if the energy around us is palpably, you know, distracting. But when you breathe deeply and relax your breathing, and then you focus upon issues in your life, the meaning and purpose of life, meaning and purpose. Viktor Frankl, the great Viennese therapist, and we're going to hear a clip from him tomorrow. I found some clips over the weekend. I'm going to share with you this great mind. He survived 5 concentration camps. And for a lot of us who read Erich Fromm and Rollo May and Viktor Frankl, among others, that really left us empowered. And you don't hear them mentioned today, like somehow they're dinosaurs and put them in a museum. No, we need them more than ever. I mean, the woman you just heard a few moments ago, she's young. I'm guessing around, 22, 23 years old. And listen to her combining history, philosophy, social issues, and challenging the desires and wants and demands of a minority that cares not about what other people think of them. They want to eliminate the word woman. And they've taken issue with lesbians. They're going after lesbians and attacking them, even physically attacking. And that's wrong at every level. But who has the courage to stand up when you stand up to defend what is right and humane and decent and ethical and moral? You're suddenly attacked by this whole movement out there, and mostly it's young people, uneducated. Well, how many people in the world could understand what, in college could even understand what she's saying? And we played you a clip 2 weeks ago. They didn't even know where they didn't know who the queen of, what country the Queen of England was queen of. They didn't know whether the Atlantic was on the East Coast or West Coast. They couldn't answer these. You know, they didn't know who America fought in the Revolutionary War. They didn't know who fought in the Civil War. They knew nothing. Oh, but they knew their TikTok. They knew their Kardashians' names because it was asked. So imagine how far down the rabbit hole we've gone in all of our evolutionary pursuits of a higher sense of being. So I talk about these things. And after that talk, then I ask them, please finish the walk in silence. But focus upon the smells in the air, and they suddenly start smelling the honeysuckle. They had walked by honeysuckle, but they didn't pay attention to it, so it wasn't important. I call it the dead horse syndrome. When you walk right over something and you say, I didn't see it. Yeah, it was right there. You weren't paying attention to what you were seeing. You weren't making it important. That's why we can make working class people who are suffering, children who are suffering, 16 million Americans going to bed hungry. We don't see them, so they're not important. So mindful meditation brings you to a place where suddenly you can focus upon what is important and then direct positive and healing energy to it and cause things to change for the better. So when you come down on all levels of food preparation and growing food and sprouting and all types of discussions, all this is going to be there. And it's done in a joyful and fun and upbeat lots of laughter, where people feel they can relax. Because there, you are not judged by your religion, by your age, by your ethnicity, by your sexuality. None of that you're judged by. You're just accepted as a loving, sentient spirit. That makes a big difference. So if you want to join us for 1 or 2 weeks in September for a special retreat where lives can be changed for the better, call Luann at 903-881-7008. Now, and by the way, thank everyone for going over to Eutrice Lead Show at 5 o'clock. Her entire audience went over and it increased. We knew it would, and it did. And now some hard-hitting programs Monday to Friday right here, and we have about 15 new programs coming on the air, some of the best in the world, because they want to be on this network. So let's go to them now.